Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, August 13th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, first half of the show, let's talk about some box office stuff. Why don't you run through the top 10 movies at the box office this past weekend?
Let's do that, shall we, Ben? So it was a heck of a weekend, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But just for starters, Deadpool and Wolverine maintained the number one spot for the third weekend in a row with a $53.7 million take, dropped a little less than 45% in its third weekend, crossed the $1 billion mark worldwide. It will soon pass Joker to become the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. Impressive stuff. Equally impressive, It Ends With Us from Sony Pictures debuted at number two with $50 million. It actually had a better per-screen average because it was playing on a lot fewer screens. We'll talk more about that in a second, but that is very, very impressive stuff. Also impressive is Twisters, holding on to the number three spot in its fourth weekend, just a 34% drop with $15 million. This one's going to do very well domestically, but there are problems there. We'll get into that in a second. Not so good was Borderlands, the long-delayed video game adaptation from director Eli Roth, came at number four with just $8.6 million. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that a lot in a second, but that is brutal stuff. Number five was Despicable Me 4, Hanging Like Crazy, $7.9 million, dropped just 30% in its sixth weekend. Number six was M. Night Shyamalan's latest Trap, dropped 57% for $6.6 million in its second weekend. You know, not great. We won't talk about this one a whole lot, but I will say it's already poised to surpass the global total of Knock at the Cabin, his movie from last year. So, you know, Shyamalan's audience is still there for better, you know, it should be okay. Number seven, we have Inside Out 2 with another $4.8 million on its ninth weekend, dropping less than 30%, even though it lost 415 screens. Incredible stuff. Number eight was Harold and the Purple Crayon, which is $3 million on its second weekend, though it did have less than a 50% drop, but that's of little consolation as it had less than $1,000 per screen. It is dropping like a rock. At number nine, we had Neon's latest horror film, Cuckoo, which made $3 million as well. Not a bad debut for that one. It was only playing on 1500 screens, so it had about a $2,000 per screen average. It was never going to be Long Legs, but this is what Neon does, so this is pretty good. Speaking of Long Legs, it is still hanging around in the top 10 in its fifth weekend with $1.9 million. Dropped 53%, just because we won't talk about this one a lot more. It is now at $71 million domestic, approaching $20 million internationally, $90.5 million worldwide. And maybe the biggest surprise of the summer, Long Legs is crushing it.
Okay, so Ryan, I want to ask you something. We got an email about this. I'm springing this on you now. But Charlie wrote in and said, I love Ryan's box office recaps, but I've realized I don't think I get per screen averages. I'm sure I could Google it, but I don't think I understand why the metric is a helpful tool. Is per screen average the actual screen? Is it per showing? And then they go on to say, I go to several theaters. My most visited is Cinemark, which is the biggest local chain in Salt Lake City, which mostly seats about 100 people in a theater. We also have a local chain called Megaplex, where some of the theaters seat about 60 people, but others seat around 150. I'm just trying to understand how filling a theater to capacity could impact that metric, where a semi-empty theater could make more slash as much. So do you want to run through and explain why per screen averages matter and sort of why that is a helpful metric for you?
I'd love to. So this is a great question, actually. So this is, as with math, it is an average, right? So let's look at the number one movie this weekend. Let's take Deadpool and Wolverine, for example. So according to Box Office Mojo, it was playing in 4,330 screens this weekend. So that means screen, he's saying there's, you know, some of those hold 60, some of those are 120, you know, it all varies. But the average for those screens for the weekend was $12,419. And what that means is for the weekend, the average screen across the United States brought in $12,419. Does that mean all of them did? No. Some markets did a lot more, some markets did less, but that was the average for each one of those screens. Now, the reason that that is important is because that determines how much traffic a given movie is giving a theater. So you can have a movie play on a bunch of screens, and let's look at Harold and the Purple Crayon. That played on 3,325 screens this weekend, except it only made $922 per screen because it only made $3 million this weekend. So those screens are not being used very effectively for the theater because they're drawing a lot less business, which means they're selling a lot less popcorn, selling a lot less soda, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And again, that's an average. That's a little less than 1,000 for the average. I mean, some of those theaters must have been damn near empty all weekend in some of these smaller markets. So, that's why it's an important metric because, you know, and that's why you'll see some of these, what we call a platform rollout, where you have a movie like Sing Sing, which is in theaters right now, but it's only playing in a handful of theaters. But those theaters, like the per screen average is crazy good because those handful of theaters are in key markets. And they're drawing out big crowds. So mm-hmm. you'll use that sort of, you know, buzz from those packed houses to sort of build for a smaller movie. And then that's why you'll kind of focus on the per screen average in the indie market a lot. So that's kind of, I guess, maybe a primer. Did I answer all the questions or
I think so. I have one question, which is, do you know how much control the actual theaters have over whether or not they can basically kick a movie out if that per screen average is super low for them, or if that's done on an individual level? Cause I remember years ago writing about some of the stuff that Disney was doing with Star Wars, The Force Awakens. And I think they did it with Last Jedi and maybe even like Avengers Endgame and stuff as well. Some of their bigger movies, they basically like essentially boxed theaters in to saying, hey, if you want to play this movie, you have to give us a guarantee that you're going to show it for X number of weeks. And we take this percentage, and it's kind of like a take it or leave it deal. They were really like sort of bullying theaters because they knew that they had the goods. And so I wonder if that kind of wheeling and dealing happens for every single movie, or like individually, or if, you know, if theaters have the ability to sort of pull the plug on stuff based on the performance of a given movie.
I mean, there are agreements made for each movie, but they're not often as strict, right? Like theaters have, you know, again, unless it's a Star Wars, for example, Harold and the Purple Crayon, I imagine they probably had a 2-week deal or something. for like a limited, you know, like it had to be on this many screens. But then I imagine next week it's going to just shed screens like crazy because the studios can't box theaters in on every single movie. If it doesn't work, they can't make them hold those screens. You know what right. I mean? So yeah, there is, they do have flexibility, but there are also like deals with each movie. So it's a complicated metric all around, right? Because sometimes, yeah, they might have, you know, Deadpool and Wolverine where you probably have to have a guarantee for a certain number of weeks and a certain number of screens. But yeah, that's all the math, and that's why running a theater is complicated. And that's also why the box office is complicated. All this stuff is, there are all these tiny little moving parts. But yeah, that is a thing where, you know, and that's also part of the reason why some of these movies can run to VOD very quickly, because if they bomb in theaters and they shed a bunch of screens, well, then maybe the best option is, you know, if it's a flop in theaters, bring it to VOD. But yeah. You know, I have my thoughts on that, but that's part of the reason that happens now.
Gotcha.
You know, so anyway, so yeah, that's hopefully that's helpful, but that is you're right. I do talk about that every week. I've never really explained it, but for people that need to know, that is kind of why that matters.
Cool. Okay. I appreciate that. All right. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about This Ends With Us, which is a movie that I think does not necessarily have the biggest critical support. I think a lot of folks are kind of like, this is like middling whatever, but it's based on a wildly popular book and apparently did very, very well for itself. So what's your takeaway for this one?
Look, my takeaway for this one is plentiful. Let's talk about, first off, $50 million. This is one of those situations where everybody wins. It does not matter that it didn't come in number one. It looked like it might for a bit, but we have a movie with a $25 million budget that made $50 million domestic and $30 million internationally. It made $80 million over a single weekend. It's going to be a $100 million movie any day now, meaning it's quadrupled its budget, probably maybe by its second weekend, well before the second weekend is over with. You know, and the word of the cinema score is good. The audience score is much better than the critic rating. So this is going to get good word of mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's going to make a ton of money. A few things here. One, Hollywood for a while kind of abandoned like straight up novel adaptations of just like hit books that, and instead they were like just going to become like miniseries on, you know, cable mm-hmm. and streaming. And I don't know why, because it's like you have built in popularity and that sort of worked here. A great example of this as well was 2022 with Where the Crawdads Sing Were, which is a movie I remember we were talking about, at Slash Film a little bit before, and nobody really seemed to give any credit to. And I was like, no, I think this is going to be a bit of a sleeper hit. Similarly from Sony, similarly, critics were meh on it. It has a 96% audience score. It ended up making, I think, $140 million worldwide on a $25 million budget. These things work very well. The other part of that, the equation is, and you and I know we've talked about this in the podcast before, is Hollywood sort of catering to traditionally women audiences. This is very much a movie aimed at women, and well, lo and behold, they showed up. You know, I mean, it's so I you know, again, I don't understand why, you know, that isn't happening more frequently, but I mean, yeah, there's a lot to take away here. Yeah, maybe looking to books and not just of the comic variety is a good way to, you know, an IP obsessed Hollywood. I don't understand why this doesn't happen a little more frequently, but yeah, I mean, but yeah, this is also a little bit of trivia. This is the first time in 34 years that a married couple has had the top two movies on the charts at the same time, going back to Ghost and Die Hard 2 with Bruce Willis and Demi Moore. So that's kind of cool, you know, because you got Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively here. So, but yeah, it's a beautiful example of counter programming working brilliantly. Yeah, I mean, it's a late summer hit that we really could use. And it's another example of like things going much, much, much better than they were earlier this year. Yeah. So yeah, you know, it's just good stuff. It's all good stuff.
And a sequel has already been announced, and it looks like Blake Lively might actually be directing that sequel. Is that right?
Not announced, but they're Hoover did write a sequel novel. This movie made, again, okay, let's say this movie made $80 million in its entire theatrical run against a $25 million budget. I would say there's a better than decent chance that that gets a sequel. It made $80 million this opening weekend worldwide. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is no question Sony is going to open the negotiations for a sequel. We're not a gossip rag, but there has been a bunch of rumored sort of drama that went down behind the scenes with the director, Justin Baldoni, and the cast, including Blake Lively, but a recent report from People suggests that, again, without commentary directly from Blake Lively, that, you know, she kind of has her eyes on maybe directing the sequel, but Baldani's company has the optioned rights to the book. So I don't know how that's all going to play out. But the one thing I can say is I can't imagine Lively coming back if there was drama with Baldani and if he's in the director's chair again. So maybe Sony tries to buy him out. I don't know. But but there, I guarantee you those conversations are probably starting. So,
yeah. And there's enough money to be made here that I'm sure whoever needs to get paid to smooth out whatever wrinkles there might be, Sony's going to make that happen. I'm almost positive, because there's just too much to be.
There's way too much money. Yeah. Well, especially if they act fast, right? You and I have also talked about sometimes these sequels take way too long to make. Like, you got to, this is like a Strike While the Iron's Hot situation. This is like a Deadpool to Deadpool 2 situation where, okay, you get this thing out in 2 years because, you know, like, your audience is there. And but I also think, you know, looking at the positive, that'd be a cool way for Lively to sort of take the director's chair for the first time. It'd make a lot of sense. It reminded me of what Michael B. Jordan did with Creed 3. And that worked out exceedingly well. So it's an interesting wrinkle. We'll see what happens. But, a little too early to talk about that, but it would be interesting.
Okay, so let's talk about Borderlands, because we talked about this last week. There's been a lot of conversation about this movie over the past several years about the tumultuous production, let's put it that way. And it seems like the final product that was released into theaters just did not resonate with people at all. So I don't know if you have any other, like, 10,000-foot takeaways beyond just the obvious here, but what's your read on this?
Oh, my God. I can't talk about this movie without getting upset. I haven't even seen it yet, but look. Okay, so look, this movie finished principal photography more than 3 years ago with Roth behind the camera. Eli Roth left to direct Thanksgiving, a movie that was released last year and has a sequel in development, all while this movie was technically in post-production. Mm-hmm. It has a $115 million budget, not accounting for marketing. An $8.6 million domestic opening weekend for a movie of that size is abysmal. It made a little over $7 million internationally, which means it had like a sub-$17 million global debut. Lionsgate sold off a lot of the international rights to cover roughly 60% of the budget, is my understanding. So they're a little bit insulated, but 40% of $115 million is a hell of a lot of money still. Look, this movie has a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes and a D+ cinema score. I could not find a single example otherwise of a movie, of a blockbuster of this size earning such a terrible cinema score. Audiences and critics are almost universally united in their hate for this movie. Basically, this to say Lionsgate had to dump this thing. They knew it was bad. There was nothing to be done. It is something very bad happened along the way, and a lot of bad decisions were made. This is cherished IP. It's one of the highest selling video game franchises of all time. I don't know. Maybe you look to Roth being hired to direct this when he doesn't have any big budget experience. You look to Lionsgate never, ever, ever doing well with big budget franchise films. You got to keep in mind, The Hunger Games didn't start out that way. It became that way after the first one was a hit. Lionsgate does not do well with this stuff, and I have implored them many times to stop it, because they're very good with mid-budget stuff. This is what hurts them. Lionsgate really needs to survive to have a healthy theatrical marketplace, and this is killing them.
Yeah.
Yes, they insulate themselves, but this is the kind of thing that just makes me angry. Like, truthfully, I love this stuff. I love popcorn blockbuster stuff. And I love Lionsgate. I like Eli Roth as a filmmaker. I love the cast and just everything being an utter catastrophe. I don't know. It's bad for theaters. It's bad for everything, you know, because you got this planned tentpole late summer just absolutely tanks. And, you know, so I don't know. It's just, it's upsetting to me personally. And you can't help but wonder how top down something this disastrous ends up being allowed across the finish line. But
I was just going to ask you that, and this is maybe a provocative question. Is there a world where Lionsgate just scraps the movie and says, you know, this is a piece of crap. It's been years since we finished it. We've tried every which way in post to make something of it. We know it's going to be terrible. is there an alternate universe where they just say, you know what, we're going to take the L on this one in a big way and just make sure nobody ever sees this?
I'll tell you where I respect Lionsgate. And look, it's weird that we're even having this conversation, but you look at what Warner Brothers Discovery did with Coyote versus Acme, with Batgirl, with Scoob Holiday Haunt, where they're just scrapping movies for tax write-offs.
Yep. The difference, real quick, is that those filmmakers didn't want that to happen. And I would think in this situation with Borderlands, because Eli Roth left, maybe it would be, I don't know, more acceptable. I mean, it would suck for sure. I'm just trying to posit a scenario here. It would suck for all the people who worked on the movie to never have their work seen.
And that's I guess that's what I'm getting at, right? Is that like that? Don't get me wrong, because Warner Brothers set the precedent. I wonder if that was at least discussed. Mm-hmm. But I still ultimately think that, okay, it's bad. It's bad, but it's so many people work on these things to just have it never come out. You know, because there's visual effects artists that can point to and say, okay, maybe the movie, but here is an example of my work, you know, and there are elements like the costuming, even just from the trailers, looks great. So you can have costumers and set designers and people be like, this is my work. And, you know, so I don't know I respect the fact that, okay, you know what, we made a bad movie. At least we put it out in the world, because I think the flip side is so much worse.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I was just wondering if you thought that conversation was actually had or was a valid one for the folks
It definitely seems like they probably weighed all options. That's why it was delayed for so long. But I got to admit, I mean, also Lionsgate is a much smaller company than Warner Brothers, right? So I imagine the tax write-off movie thing is still complicated to me. I don't fully understand the nuances of that, but I have to imagine it might have made slightly more sense. And also, again, Warner Brothers purely own those movies. My understanding, you know, like I said, Lionsgate pre-sold 60% of the rights overseas. So I think they had to release it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, then you have all those people that need to be made whole, or at least attempted to made whole. So, it's easily because I had people, I wrote a thing for us yesterday calling it the bomb of the year. And I do this stuff for a living. I think it's fair for me to sort of assess, you know, and people were like, Madam Web. I'm like, I promise you, Madam Web was not this big of a bomb. And that's saying something. So this is if something comes for this movie's lunch before year's end, somebody is having a really bad day. That's all I'll say.
Real quick, any other box office stuff you want to touch on before we take a break and get into the other news?
Yeah, a couple of real quick things. Bad Boys Ride or Die crossed the $400 million mark worldwide this weekend. That has sort of become the automatic sequel number in the pandemic era. So, you know, Martin Lawrence and Will Smith have talked about having one more in them. You know, we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised at this point. The only other thing I'd like to point out is Twisters, as I mentioned, did really well again this weekend. It is now at $222 million domestic, and it's holding very well. The problem is it's only made $88 million overseas. It just is not finding an audience overseas. So with a $150 million budget, even though it's made $310 worldwide, unless it can somehow find some international audience, there's almost no way another sequel happens. But kind of interesting. It's just not playing overseas. Not really super sure why, but anyway, that's all I got.
Okay. All right, let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BADLANDS ranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
All right, so a few news items here that I wanted to run through with you real quick. Crawl 2 is happening, the sequel to the 2019 movie Crawl, directed by Alexander Aja. And I never saw this film. It was about a woman who is trapped in a hurricane in Florida, and there are giant gators in her house or something.
Hell yeah.
And did you see this movie?
Oh, hell yeah, I did. Okay. I love Crawl. Crawl, I'm not trying to be funny. Crawl absolutely rules.
I've heard good things about it. It's been on my list of things to see for a long time. I know it has its fans. I think Quentin Tarantino said it was his favorite movie of 2019, which is
it is seriously very good. It is a great, like, contained creature feature. It's great.
Okay, so the good news is that Alexander Aja is returning to direct this sequel, and it's getting a new location. Instead of being set in Florida, Crawl 2 is going to be in New York City. So it's going to center on the quote-unquote urban dangers of New York City. But we don't actually know if it's going to be alligators or if it's going to be rats or if there's going to be like some other being that is crawling around, some other creature or something. But as somebody who has seen the first movie, Ryan, like, what would you want to see from Crawl 2 set in New York City?
More of the same would be just fine to me, like with a different setting, like because the first one is so good, but like a direct sequel wouldn't make a lot of sense, like putting those characters in peril with alligators again. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea of just going like, it almost looks like what they're doing with Smile 2, where like Smile 2 looks like, you know, okay, it's the same premise, but with different characters in a different setting to sort of keep things interesting. I hope that's what they do here. Yeah. I don't know, like, because Florida, it's more like boonies, swamp, you know, this, that. Like, I think, like, the idea of taking, like, utilizing that big city setting would be super fun. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. When Alexander Aja, like, hits it, he really hits it for me. So, like, I trust him. If he's coming back, that, to me, is the biggest indicator that this is going to be, like, well worth my time, is that it's him again with a different idea. So, yeah, I trust in him to sort of just make use of the city setting, I guess, would be the one thing. I don't care if it's gators again. I don't care if it's, as you mentioned, giant rats, which would be kind of fun. but like, yeah, just make use of the setting.
Yeah. BJ wrote the news article for us, and she was comparing this or speculating that it might be like the movie from 1980 called Alligator, which is about like sewer gators coming up in a big city. And she also was speculating that if there are gators involved in New York, she was like, I really want this to be a crowd on New Year's Rockin' Eve having to scramble around because gators are coming up out of the sewers. And
that sounds expensive.
So, yeah, but it sounds like a fun idea. So
that sounds like a fun idea, but that sounds very expensive. That was my first thought. I know it's not fun to be that guy, but also, if you haven't, to BJ's point, if you haven't seen Alligator, it wasn't really available for a number of years, and I had never seen it until a couple years ago, but I believe Shout Factory did a 4K restoration of it, and it's streaming on Shudder, I believe. Alligator is a good time. So yeah, I definitely recommend checking that out.
Awesome. I wanted to mention a story that was really kind of surprising. Joaquin Phoenix walked away from a movie that was supposed to be shooting. I think he left like 5 days, or the movie fell apart like 5 days before production was supposed to start. Todd Haynes, who directed May December last year, had teamed up with Joaquin Phoenix to make this untitled romantic drama where Joaquin Phoenix plays a gay character, and there's supposed to be like a lot of sexually explicit material. And the weird part about all this is that Joaquin Phoenix was the person who sort of, if not outright originated the idea, was really the one who was pushing for it and like helped Todd Haynes cook up the story, and was like really, it seemed like a passion project for Joaquin Phoenix. And sets had already been built in Guadalajara, Mexico, where they were like gearing up and really ready to film. And then he just walked away because a report from Variety says that he just got cold feet about the project. It's just extremely, extremely rare for a major actor to walk away from a movie like that so close to production. It just almost never happens. So you can read more about that at the Slash Film article. There's a couple more details there, but I just wanted to mention it because it's just so unusual for something like that to happen. But I don't know if there's any sort of as far as I know, that the most recent report that I saw was that Deadline says that this movie is completely dead. So it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to coax Joaquin Phoenix back into it or anything. It just seems like there are people who still need to be to get paid for the work that they've already done in the movie. So it just seems like kind of a disaster. So maybe we'll hear more about that. More details might come out later on, but I wanted to mention that real quick. Ryan, when was the last time you went to the Cartoon Network website? Is that a website that you have frequented in your life?
They used to have a lot of like free streaming cartoons on there. Mm-hmm. And the Adult Swim website as well. So I don't want to say super frequented, but I definitely semi-regular, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I have not. I mean, I think I probably did when I was a kid. I mean, the website's been up for 25 plus years or something like that. So I think maybe when I was younger, I clicked around on there in the more innocent days of the internet. It's been a long time since I've been on that website personally, but I think it did have folks who would go there to play games. And they had, yeah, like you said, full episodes of different shows and stuff like that. But in the latest piece of wisdom from Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav, the Cartoon Network website has been abruptly shut down, and it now redirects people to the Max streaming service. So I don't know. Yet another just really bad look for David Zaslav. At this point, it's exceedingly obvious to me that this guy does not give a crap about optics. He is just a ruthless, you know, in terms of like whatever decision he can make that will save the company a little bit of money, regardless of whether that means crapping on a legacy or he just does not care about anything really, except for positioning the company to either be purchased or to enrich his own pay package at the end of the year or whatever, and try to appease Wall Street basically. So just another in the long line of boneheaded decisions by David Zaslav. So I don't know if you have anything else to add to that, Ryan, but I just wanted to bring that up too.
Oh, it super sucks. Yeah, it's just like, you know, running and maintaining a website is a little more expensive than people might expect. So yeah, there's probably some money to be saved here. I think it speaks more broadly about the challenges facing the online, like, publishing industry, I guess, let's say, like, that, you know, the internet is kind of in sour shape right now. But still, come on, like, for a company as big as Warner Brothers Discovery, is the Cartoon Network website the reason that you're in financial peril?
Right.
You know, I don't know. It's just like, come on, man. Like, the optics of this are so much worse, and it's just so much, like, there's gotta be a better way. And, yeah, I don't know. That's all I got to say. It just sucks.
The guy, yeah, he still has a job, even though apparently Warner Brothers Discovery lost about $10 billion in the second quarter of 2024 alone. So anyway, it will continue.
The stock value under, no, I'm not going to, like, last week it was after the quarterly earnings call, because they had to write off like $10 billion worth of like declining value from their cable networks and stuff. Mm-hmm. The stock price has dropped so precipitously under Zaslav, and my belief is that they were trying to merge with Paramount and do some of this other stuff to become too big to fail. And I think now that some of those options are not on the table, I don't know what's going to happen. But there, it's not like things have gone super well financially under Zaslav, so I don't know. This is upsetting to me.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. I'm sure more updates will be coming. All right, last news item I wanted to touch on with you is James Wan is remaking what our article calls one of the greatest horror movies of all time. I kind of personally take a little bit of issue with that, because I watched The Creature from the Black Lagoon for the first time in 2020 and talked about it on the podcast. And I found this movie to be like pretty silly. The creature design certainly is iconic and legendary and incredibly evocative and very like almost unsettling and weird in all the right ways. But the movie around it, the original Creature from the Black Lagoon, I don't know, a little silly, I think. But in any case, James Wan is going to be remaking this movie. So I wanted to toss this to you and see what your feelings about the original movie are and what you think about James Wan tackling a remake in the modern era.
Well, boy, now I kind of feel like I know how you guys feel when I say something that you all disagree with. I mean, I think the movie's...
So you hold this movie in very high regard, then.
I'm just a little shocked to hear you say that, but I mean, it's a little of its time, but sorry, I'm literally like reeling from here. I have not heard Ben say that until now, but let me say that I kindly disagree. It is among my favorites of the original Universal Monsters films that I have seen. I've not seen every single one of them, but big fan of Bride of Frankenstein, but I would say this is right up there. I will say though, look, we've had, you know, great new takes on The Invisible Man. That new Wolfman movie looks great. These creatures are not so sacred that you can't do something with them. And I think James Wan is an unquestioned master of modern horror. And if you're going to let someone do this, hell yeah, let him do it. Apparently he's been very, he posted something on, I think, Facebook, being like, I've been very carefully considering my next directorial project. And he's like, might be heading to the lagoon, basically, you know. Mm-hmm. He carefully considered this. And it's hard for me to think of another person working today that I would prefer to see do this. Other than, like, Guillermo del Toro, but he already kind of did his take on this in Shape of Water. So, like, I, you know, in some ways. But, so I'm all for it. I'm very excited to see what this turns into.
I remember thinking, so I've only seen Creature from the Black Lagoon one time, right? So, like, maybe my reaction is a bit strong for somebody who's only seen the movie once, but, and it was several years ago at this point. But, like, the underwater effects, I remember being pretty impressive in terms of, like, not visual effects, but just, like, the actual filming of underwater, because the first movie came out in, what, in the 50s or something, right? So, like...
Yeah, I still, to this day, don't really know how they pulled all that off.
Yeah, very, very impressive technically. But I wonder if you think that James Wan being attached to a modern remake is going to take the approach of making this a really scary movie, because he's made some truly scary stuff in the past. And then he's also made something more like Malignant, which I would argue is like almost as much of a comedy as it is a like a horror movie or a thriller or whatever. So I wonder what you think his tone might be, given everything you know about James Wan as a director and his predilections as a filmmaker.
I think you only do this if you're going to try to make it scary as hell. Okay. Like, I think, like, and I think that that's what Wan would lean into. I think, like, Malignant was something very specific.
Yeah.
Like, I think Malignant was also, not for nothing, one of the best theatrical experiences I've had since the pandemic ended. Or the pandemic sort of eased up, and I was at a almost sold out showing at the Draft House, and like half of the audience was so on board with what was happening, and the other half was just like, what is happening? And the like palpable division in the room made it just like aces. So if he can accomplish anything half that entertaining, I'm gonna say, like, let's go for it. Also, if you haven't seen Malignant and somehow don't know what Malignant is yet, for the love of God, go watch Malignant. I think that like this is going to be, you know, more in line with, I guess I'd say, like Insidious or The Conjuring, you know.
Okay.
And the man can throw some levity into that stuff, but I think that like he would be leaning into his best sensibilities as a man who tries to scare the shit out of you here.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can read more about all the stories that we talked about on today's show at slashfilm.com. I've linked to a bunch of articles in the show notes as well, so you can click on them directly there. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you could find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That genuinely does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.